the one that really done it for me was the dragonflies. I'd never been aware of dragonflies at all until when we dug out the pond and it was looking open and bare and flat and empty. Dragonflies came and you could see them flying around, just dipping their tail into it. And what they were doing was they were laying their eggs. So that egg drops down to the bottom, lives as a larvae for, in some cases, up to 4 years on the bottom of the pond. And then one day in summer, you'll see this larva crawling up the side of a reed or stem on it. Out of that little shell, you'll see this dragonfly emerging. You'll see the shell cracking, the dragonfly emerging, you'll see it slowly uncurling one wing, then uncurling the other wing, same as you're getting out of bed in the morning. It straightens out the four wings, then it uncurls the body down. And it's still a limey green colour, it doesn't look like much. But then it starts to pump the colour down through each of the segments on its body. It's a little bit like, we'll say, if you had a train sitting on a railway track with the lights off and all the carriages, and it's just getting dark, and you put on the lights in the first carriage, then you put them on in the second carriage and the third carriage down along. And it's absolutely fantastic to see that. And then it takes off. And this thing that was lived all its life underwater has just climbed out of it, turned into a dragonfly. Takes off and it can hover, can fly backwards, vertical, drop down. Amazing. You can see that for yourself when you have a little pond or access to some. But dragonflies, they need still water. It doesn't work in a river. That's where you need the pond. So you need that still water. But once you see that, amazing. Wham. So I put in one pond and when I seen this, but now I'll have to admit I'm on pond number 15. My name is Tommy Early. I'm farming here on the shores of Loch Allen, on the western shore of Loch Allen, at the foot of the Arigna Valley. The farm itself here goes back several generations. The grandfather bought this place in 1888 and we're farming here since. Early, I like to be up early in the morning. Maybe that's where we got the name. Light the fire in the house and that. And come out then and the first thing is kind of, I suppose, breakfast for the troops, the hens, the cows, everything that's in has to get a breakfast. So what we're doing at the moment is we're cutting second cut silage. Okay, we're just heading over to this, have our own bale opened here now. We're going to bring out a small bit of hay for the cattle. I'm just opening up a bit of a rope here to tie a backload of hay. We'll put a little bit of hay into that and then we'll be able to tighten it up just to bring out a little bit to them. So this year for making hay, we're farming here basically on a wetland situation, but it was a very good year for us for grass growth. Right, so we're just tightening up this little load now and bring it out us. Yeah, we have Aberdeen Angus cattle here. We have one Irish Moyle cow. They're an old breed of cattle. Yeah, come on. Come on. Come on. See? Come on. Well, with the type of farming I have here, suckler cows. So that means you have your cows all the time. When a cow has a calf, then you rear the calf to between 6 to 9 months old. That says they're weaned off and they're sold off to go off to other farms for finishing. But the cows would stay with you for their lifetime. Yeah. Oh, you get to know them. Yeah. They'd know you too. But they'll be relaxed around here. This is Felix, our farm cat. So yeah, so they'll come up now and they'll have a feed on that. And what I'm also doing here is I do social farming one day a week, and along with that I bring groups that visit the farm on tours around about on the farm to show them the variety of habitats that's on it. And the layout of the farm then is that there's an area of lowland raised bog on it, there's some forestry on it, some native woodlands that have been planted up. It runs down onto the lake then, so there's lakeshore frontage on it. And these, I suppose, these fields here, we call them semi-improved grasslands. we're only here for a very short time, and we need to take care of what's here. We're in a very privileged position that we're able to walk on a bit of land and to manage it and to take care of it. You know, we're just taking care of it. That's all we're doing. We're not... you don't own it. Some people have said that the land owns you. You know, you're only here for a short time. I would have left school without much nature education, we'll say, put it that way. And we'll say if it was green, it was grass. And that was about all I knew. Most of my education has been from people that have come to visit the farm. I've had a person here that was very much into butterflies and was able to show me stuff that was happening in front of my eyes, but I had never realised. And to show me why we need nettles, to show you the different stages of caterpillars on the nettles, and to show you where that little butterfly was going to spend the winter and how it re-emerges. And I think that's the wonderful thing about being on a farm or having a garden even, that you can see stuff going through its life cycle. It's not just about going out one day and whatever you see. Over the course of, we'll say, 12 months, to see what different stuff is at different stages. So we're looking at a bit of oak woodland that was planted up here about 10 years ago. There is more birdlife, you're providing cover. The fungi are starting to move in on the bottom, so. Yeah, and we don't use any chemicals or sprays on the farm, so. It will be a very useful corridor for wildlife, refuge. Badgers, otters, pine martens. We haven't much mink. You won't have much mink when you have pine martens. They kind of suppress them. Yeah. You get the odd deer that it goes through as well. So we're going to head down and have a look on the moth trap just to see did they come in and do it last night. Well, moths is... it would have been something that I would have grown up and not known anything about. You see stuff fluttering in the night time, but it didn't do anything for you. I was looking up, they came on a couple of fellas here one time. They were doing a survey of Greenland white-fronted geese. They had a friend who was into moth trapping. Would I mind if he came down to have a look or set out a few traps? And I said, sure, no bother at all, come ahead. So Philip Strickland came down and we set out a series of traps around the place. But then when I came over them the next morning and we had a look in them, and like I had been here all my life, you know, I'd always had an interest in nature. When he opened this moth trap and showed me what was in it, I was dumbfounded. Couldn't believe it. The shape, the colours, to think that all this had been flying around me and I'd never seen a bit of it. I couldn't believe it had escaped me. So I said, I'm going to have to get out a moth trap myself. So I did, and I got into them, and it opens up a whole new world. What most people say, sure, look, moths, they're, you know, what good are they anyway? Well, they're pollinators. But you see, they don't, and I've had birdwatch groups here, and some, you know, show them the moths and I explain to them. We all see the birds flying around, and we appreciate bird because they're fairly big, they're fairly obvious. But we'd say when that bird brings out its young in the spring, there's no fruit on the trees to feed the little birds. So what they're feeding them on is the larvae of the moths that have hatched out. They're going through the trees, collecting the grubs, bringing that back, and that's what they're feeding their young on. You know, so it's all connected to each other. Right, so this is your moth trap. The way it works is you have it plugged into a source of power, and then this little light bulb on top lights up, and as the moths are flying around, they're attracted to the light, and they go down through this little funnel, and then they sit inside on the egg cartons. Egg cartons are made out of the same things as trees, so they think that they're sitting on a tree, so they're happy to sit there for the night. So you come out in the morning, you take off the cover, you lift out your egg carton, and you can examine to see what species you have, how many of them have you, and you can keep a record of it and send it off to people who are recording that. Why would you be doing this? Like, it's, well, you could do it for several reasons. Number one, it's fascinating to find out what's on your own patch. But the other one then is moths have short life cycles, so they can be used as a bioindicator if something has gone wrong with the quality of air that you're breathing. This is a pink sallow bear. Even the name, they're absolutely lovely. Buff tip, we've been looking at the caterpillars of that one just recently. There's a pepper moth, the lovely black and white one. You know, you could have a little patch of rough grass land down, what would be described as a wet bottoms in the field. And you might think, actually, there's nothing happening there. I'll change it all around and I'll do something nice. You could be doing away with something that's much better than what you put back in it. So to start from scratch, it'd be find out what's there already and see what you can do with that. The farm here, you're not just thinking about, we'll say, cows. It's gone much further than that. You're thinking about all the other stuff around you, how you're managing the fields, the bees on the farm here, who's already living in that. What can you do to make it even better all the time? Once you're armed with that information, you can make better informed decisions. Okay, well, we'll go in here and we'll have a look. This is a shed I'm converted into a little, I suppose you could call it, a little bat hotel. I've had every other sort of a hotel around in Shamble, so I thought a little bat hotel would be nice. This basically is a little stone-walled cow byre. That's what would have been in it in the past. What it would have looked like was, we'll say, stone walls and a galvanised roof on it. But it wasn't a suitable area for bats. So I got in touch with Bat Conservation and they came down and studied it. And the advice was to take off the galvanised roof, and we put back on a timber on it. But we've slates now on top of those timbers in order to make it a more suitable place for bats. We'll have a look inside. There was a window on it, and we blocked up that window, and we'll be able to close up this door on it. That's to keep the predators out. Bats will have access in and out of it through this window here, and we'll be putting a grill on the window. So when the bats come in, there's going to be two bat roosts on the wall here, and we're going to put a ceiling on half of the roof that's in it in order to be able to accommodate as many species as we can. There was a corner here where there was a wall, so we took down the wall because it wasn't suitable, because between the wall it had been cement used between the stones on the wall. But we've kept those stones and we're going to build a pillar here in the middle, a dry stone pillar in the middle of the shed, and maybe some of the species will use that to crawl into for a cover as well. Of all the species that we have, soprano pipistrelles, we have all the range, because there's a long-eared bat, there's dub intons, they'd be the fellas that'd be on the river, there's lizers, there's horseshoe bats as well. But they're amazing little creatures. If you were out of a nice summer's evening at your barbecue and the head is getting it off you with midges, to think that bat is eating about over 3,000 midges at night. So, you know, we can easily accommodate them on the farm, so why not? Like, they've been here for a long, long time, much longer than me. So who am I to say, you know, you no longer have a place to live? You know, they've been here, so I have to respect them. If you had a chance to do one thing on a farm, the one thing I would do is create a pond. These were created in order to get material to build the embankment around that corner of the bog. But these are amazing places. When the frogs are spawning in them, we've had hundreds of frogs here, this little pond here. I'd love to see that mass of frogs together. Then once the frogs are there for a while, the otters come up from the river. They get this into them. So the otters are coming in feeding on the frogs for a short time. Then when the frogs, they'll disperse and they're gone off. In the summertime, then you'll see newts in the ponds. So there's a lot of stuff coming and going. We think we can solve it all by doing one thing, but we need a connection with nature. You need to have that sort of a place to take stock of yourself. You can't just keep running making money. You know, you have to stand back and see, what is it all about? You can have a very intensively managed farm, but if you step back from it for a while, it's going to change, and nature will eventually take that back over and do its own thing anyway. We like to think that we're here and that nature never had a right up to this, but sure, when you look at it, like, it's only about 9,000 years since we first put our foot on this island. Do you know? Which is nothing. 9,000 years is nothing. And we think that we have it all sorted and sussed. Not at all. Nature will do far better when a lot of us is gone. That's the reality of it, you know? We might like to think that we're the... There was nothing like us before this, and that there'd be nothing like us after us. But we're just passing through. You know?